Good show. Pues I feel like I have to hurry up because va a pasar el tren y se va a oír y, and then it's not gonna sound professional. You're gonna be like, oh, they've been pulling our legs this whole entire time. But yes, we're real. And I'm recording right here in the back room from my apartment at Pilsen in Chicagoatlán, Illinois. Lo digo en Spanish para que se molesten las personas. En fin. Hi, everybody. How you doing? I am bringing you yet another amazing interview with people here from Chicago. As you guys know, our schedules, Fabi's schedule and my schedule are a little crazy, but that's okay. That doesn't mean that we're not gonna get together again and do our thing. It doesn't mean that we're not gonna do our presentations. It doesn't mean that this thing is over. It just means that we have to make it work, como Latinos que somos. And speaking of, that is one of the topics that we touch upon with my very, very, very good friend, Yvette Mayorga. And this is part of the interview that you're going to listen to here about the perils of being a Latinx artist in this country, but also about how as Latinx artists, we make it work. And here in Latinos Who Lunch, we are trying to make an example out of that. So here I am reporting, telling you that you need to listen to Yvette Mayorga. She's giving us some really great advice, but also we get into amazing food and en fin. Hablamos de un chingo de cosas. But I'm going to leave you with the interview right now. I know this is a quick introduction, but after the end of the interview, I want you to stick around because Yvette talks about this band and I started getting into this band and it's a Chicago band and I'm all about it. They're about to release an album. So I want to talk a little bit more about this band and making my recommendation and I'll say my goodbyes. So enjoy this amazing conversation with my really, really, really wonderful friend, Yvette Mayorga. Buenos días, querida audiencia de Latinos Who Lunch. Here right now at the headquarters in Chicagoatlán, at Pilsen. And I am sitting down with my favorite Chicago person, that is Yvette Mayorga. Hi.
Hi, I'm your favorite Chicago person.
You are totally my favorite Chicago person. Anybody that is listening to the podcast and they're going like, fuck, I thought it was me. Sorry, but not sorry. ¿Qué tal, Yvette? If you are a true fan of Latinx Who Lunch Clicks, you will know that you have been in our podcast before. It was a long-distance interview. I remember very well. This was, wow, like 2 years ago?
I think it was in 2017 because it was right before I had the solo show at Expo Chicago.
That's crazy.
So that is crazy. That's 2 years ago.
If you would have told me 2 years ago that we would have been in the same room, in the same city.
I would not have believed it.
Yeah. I wouldn't because Chicago was this place that I never thought I ended up, even though I came here a long time ago. And I was like, I can see myself here. And now I'm here and I'm like, I cannot see myself here. But anyway, so why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and then we'll get into the type of food that you like.
Which is many, many forms. So I'm an artist, an interdisciplinary, but then now I've been hearing people say multidisciplinary, but I think that they're one and the same.
Well, I think interdisciplinary is more like you can do an installation with film and sculpture, but you can, if you're multidisciplinary, that means that you can do film and then you can do sculpture, you know? So I think you're both.
I think I am both. A mixture of both, I think, would make more sense. But I'm an artist, also an educator, and as of lately, doing some community organizing, which has been exciting because it's this new sort of form of looking at my work through the lens of community-based activism in the parks. So that's been really interesting. But my practice is installation-based mostly, but it takes forms of video, painting, And it's really focused on exploring the idea of the American dream through the use of frosting.
That's amazing. When I first saw your art, I was like, okay, I think I know where this is going, but I want to know more. And you guys, I don't know if you follow me on Instagram, but we just had, my husband and I did a studio visit with Yvette, and I was blown away to the point that I haven't been in a long time. I'm going to tell you why. So
please.
I am very disappointed with art. I'm very disappointed with the art world. And art is it's a very difficult even thing for me to talk about, because I teach the colonial period and I'm always problematizing a lot of those things, right? So it's very rare for me to go into a space and see a piece of art and be moved. Because to me, those are Victorian ideas. Like, oh my God, y sentí que se me movía el universo. That only happens with music. Like, it doesn't happen to me with actual material culture. So to be in the studio with you, talking about your art, and I was making all these fucking connections about your artwork, it was an intense moment. So for that, I thank you, because your art is fucking amazing. And there's so much that we're going to talk about your art. But before we get into what you do, tell us a little bit more about how do you end up in Pilsen and what do you like about the neighborhood, the food, guara guara la cuchara.
Yeah, and thank you so much for, speaking so highly of my work, because, I really look up to you also in the way that, you're looking through these sort of historical moments through the lens of art history and, through the conversations that we've had. It's just really amazing to get the perspective that we don't get by learning art history here in the States. And so, you coming into the studio and seeing the work through the lens of your research and then having that sort of reaction to it was really honoring and humbling to me. So it was amazing.
Not literally. It was physically a visceral reaction. And that doesn't happen a lot. But so you live in Pilsen, so we're basically neighbors, because apparently every fucking Latinx artist in the city lives over here. I can't wait to run out of it. So tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, so I mean, I didn't grow up in Pilsen. I grew up in Moline, Illinois, which is 2 hours and a half northwest of Pilsen. So it's still in Illinois, but on the border of Iowa and Illinois.
That's so crazy.
It is crazy. Another, just the idea of being raised in like really the Midwest and near farm and Iowa. And, the sort of context of that is...
You were born there?
I was born there.
Okay.
Well, technically, I was born in Silvis, but it's like the town that's right next to Moline.
I see.
So it's another one of the little towns that nobody knows about except for people in the Quad Cities. But my parents had immigrated here to Chicago in the 70s. And so most from Mexico, from Jalisco and Zacatecas. So most of my siblings had grown up here and they lived in Little Village. My dad says that he lived in Pilsen with Joan Sebastian, that he was his roommate.
I love that bitch. Me cae gorda. Digo que descansa en paz, but she was cool. Hay una canción que le dedico a Emma. Oh, después te la canto, payaso. Okay, go ahead.
So, they lived here in Little Village. They both worked at Marshall Field. So my mom was a baker by day and then my dad was a janitor by night.
What's Marshall Field?
Marshall Field is where Macy's is at now on State Street. I see. Sort of the original, Macy's, I guess, of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it holds a lot of weight also in the way in which the architecture was built.
Yeah.
And it's also been like this really fundamental structure in the city because it has these like green clocks that are still there. And it's really interesting too, because when my parents talk about their life here in Chicago and, being immigrants and how, especially my mom was like navigating the train system and, not knowing the language, they would use the clocks to meet each other. So when she would get off work, they would meet there and then my dad would kind of like help and vice versa. They would help each other.
You know, it's so crazy because we take for granted the technology that we have. Like a couple of months before my wedding, I was so nostalgic about not seeing Emma all the time. But I FaceTime him every day. And I remember one day I talked to my dad and he didn't know what's up. But he knew that I was sad, because when I'm sad, I don't tell my dad what's going on, but I just need to talk to him, right? So I was talking to him and he's like, you need to understand that you're in a privileged position. You get to talk to your fiance every night. When I was working, out of town, I only will get to talk to your mom once every couple of days. I had to buy calling cards.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm. So it was like, oh my God, that's right. Like, as bad as things I think they are, they're amazing, you know?
No, yeah, definitely. That's funny too, because like I've been thinking about maps and then, you know, and using like GPS and kind of like not knowing your way. Right. Around like your own neighborhood and city, and calling cards, and like calling cards being the connection to like my grandma. And I knew that we were going to call my grandma in Mexico or my cousins. And then now it's like Facebook, all the photos that your cousins are posting of like all the stuff that's going on in Mexico. Right. And it's so different too from the way that we use the internet. And it's like really interesting because now you have access, but like you really don't.
I mean, you know. It's so crazy. It's like a whole new era. And I feel it like is. The generation that is born right now, I don't
They're
think.
They're fucked.
Yeah, they are, because they don't know the struggles. I'm sure they know some struggles today that like future generations won't know, but.
We should make a show where we get 12 like teenagers from this generation and hand them maps. And then have them navigate the world.
Imagínate.
Like no internet, just maps.
I remember like for a while, my dad will steal like, iba a la gasolinería, el 7-Eleven, y se compraba los, like the big ass maps.
Same.
And especially every time we went back to LA. So it was like, papá, pues con el celular, no, pero el güey like sacaba the big ass fucking map and put it in his dashboard. It's so funny. But anyway, green clocks, go.
Oh, yeah, right. We got so, like, off.
Sidetracked, yeah.
So, yeah, they would meet each other there. And then, you know, mom would go home, take care of the kids, which were my oldest brother and sister now, which I also see them as, like, my parents, my American mm-hmm. parents, because I feel like they gave me a lot of the sort of American, like, pop culture references at the time. Like,
right.
My brother with like his slicked back hair and like one of those like hair nets, and he had like all those like glamour mm-hmm. photos of him like in the city, and like my sister with like her Selena shirts. And so it was like this different way of like being, I guess, a young person in America and having like a two sets of parents, one right. that could give you those like references to like music and mm-hmm. TV, and then having my parents give me the other references and listening to like, what is it, like Banda Max, that Fresa song. I don't know why I always think like going to the grocery store and we were like jamming out to that song in like our big red minivan.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, totally. We all know that song. Yeah. We all know that song. So then when do you move to Pilsen? When do you move here to the neighborhood?
So I moved here in 2014, and it was after I finished undergrad at U of I in Champaign. I studied painting and anthropology, and then I applied to grad school here to our Institute for Fiber Material Studies, and I was like, if I get in, I'm going to take that leap and go to grad school right after undergrad and be a crazy person and do like 6 years of school. And it happened. So, you know, I moved here and yeah, I've been in Pilsen since.
You know, I known of you because of Justin, right? You guys did a residency together. I also, and then I came here. You met me in probably one of the most depressing weeks of my life. So
I remember,
crazy.
Yeah.
So I connected with you right away. I don't know why I was attracted to your aura. And I told you a lot of things. You probably, when after I remember going home, I'm like, wow, this bitch is going to think that I'm fucking crazy. But anyway, I knew like you were going to be my friend. But then I started meeting other people and be like, yeah, Yvette. And everybody's like, ooh, Yvette, like you have a reputation, girl. Like you have established yourself a career and you're exhibiting everywhere. Like, how do you go from being in the suburbs to like being this renowned local artist?
Girl, it ain't a suburb, it's a city.
But you know what I mean.
I think that's a Chicago thing though, because they always say like, oh, suburb, you know, anything that's like, I don't know, an hour out of Chicago, it's
girl,
like
anything
unbelievable
20 minutes from
that Pilsen
to me is a suburb, because I don't fucking know this place.
No, but it has been a crazy couple of years. I think, mm-hmm. you know, since graduating with my MFA in fiber material studies, and I was like really afraid, and I was really depressed too for a couple months after graduating. And, you know, me and my partner, Jesus.
Hey, Jesus. By the way, Jesus is one of our number one listeners here in Chicago.
He's such a fan.
It's so funny when we met him, when Emma and I met him, he was just like, y dime de esto. He's like, tell me about The Nation. I'm like, girl, I just met you. He wanted to know everything. But yeah, like, we'd love to hang out with you guys. But anyway, so with your partner, Jesus.
Yeah, and then, you know, going through the motions of, like, graduating and not knowing what to do and applying to jobs. And, you know, he was there for me, like, in those really, like, hard moments where I'm far away from home, too. It's 2.5 hours, but still, right. It's you're not able to, like, fall back right. on that immediately. And so... It was tough, and I was applying to a lot of places and not getting anything. And then finally, I think it was like 5 months after that I found something. And then I think through that sort of breakthrough of being able to have like that first stepping stone into teaching or whatever it was that I was going to be doing. And I decided to do teaching through then. Like, I started to like establish myself and apply to residencies, and I got into the Chicago Artists Coalition. And then that really helped me kind of like set the tone to continue to like push myself to be this, you know, this artist, this independent artist, and to have all like the necessary tools that I need.
What was the moment, what was the exhibition that made you go, fuck, I'm in it?
I think it was Expo.
Yes.
And it was from our last conversation, because I mean, you know, that space is like, it's hard to have space in that space.
Right.
You know, because you have to
play the game to have
you
a space.
You do, and yeah. You have to be so, applying with like a gallery.
For those of you who don't know, think about an art expo is basically like a big conference. ¿Cómo se llama? ¿Cómo se dicen those
art? It's like Basel, I guess, but for Chicago. I mean, yeah, Basel's so like
you basically
crazier.
Go into this big ass warehouse, and there's booths. And each booth is going to be a different gallery.
Right.
And sometimes they exhibit all their artists. Sometimes they feature one artist. And the idea is for people to start networking and selling art. So it's like an intense like couple of days of like trading and meeting and exchanging and showing off and this exactly. and this and that. So basically, your gallery had a booth, and you transformed that booth. I remember pictures. It was all pink, and it had all these paintings and sculptures. And so that attracted people's attention. Like, what was the response to your work to people? Like, what are the questions that they were asking?
It was interesting, you know, because of the nature of the space and the people that are there and collectors who maybe don't know so much about work, but they're in it for the game. And then, you know, historians, curators, artists who know the sort of references, the history, and they're genuinely interested. And so I think that it was both.
Yeah.
And I think it was really interesting to be in that space, to have this installation, to have that opening like preview day where it's all like people with money that come in to like view work and have people say like really
so
fucked
crazy.
Up shit to
Let me hear it. So, okay, how many white people were surprised that you were Mexican, that you were making direct references to Mexican culture with your art? So, like, if you're not familiar with Yvette's art, I'm going to explain, like, quickly, describe quickly a painting of her. So is it pigment that you use? Or it's dry foam, right?
It's actual paint. It's okay. Acrylic paint, but it's piped through a piping bag.
Right, and piping like cakes.
Like decorating.
So
yes,
the
cakes.
Final result is this very visceral, very tactile objects. And sometimes think about like a small canvas. They're filled with, sometimes the backgrounds are pink, sometimes the backgrounds are dark. And then the lightest pieces that I saw, it was a shape of a vase and of a very European looking like Rococo vase with all these piping details in it, pink, white, etc., etc. But inside these pieces, she always makes a political commentary. So it really is a conversation about consumption. It's about the sensuous, that it's sugared, the attraction right. to it, and the way that we consume trauma, right? So you will see a like little detail of un monito cruzando el border, right? But this is inside this like decadence. Very rococo, decadent, sugar, I want to eat it type of thing, which is almost like watching the news today, you know? Like
yeah.
You watch the news and then the next thing they're trying to sell you a car. Right. So that's how I see it. So imagine that, but blown into a space, like mm-hmm. where you see all of that everywhere. And there's a lot of like current political commentary. Yes. So I want to know why people thought about when you were like, oh no, this is about this and that.
Well, I mean, similar to other, you know, installations that I've done, I had similar reactions where people don't know the work. People are drawn to the aesthetics of the work, the color right. of the work, and the smell of the work, because although the paintings are made with paint and the sculptures are made with, you know, either plaster or paint, I always include real frosting within the exhibitions to play with the senses, to have that sensory experience that you don't know what's edible and what's not. And then to you, for the audience to be thinking about this idea of wanting.
Right.
And, you know, like that sort of desire within the context of the work.
But that's, I get excited. So this is why I it's so Baroque, right?
Right.
Because think about going inside of a church in Michoacan. And I made references of this over and over again. Look at Latinos Who Lunch Me Too video. Shout out Jasmine and Alfredo who, anyway. But my mom, when we moved to Vegas, she goes, wow, I feel like I'm in Michoacan. And I'm like, what does Vegas have to do with Michoacan? And she said, it's because I'm overwhelmed in the same way. Baroque structures in Mexico were constructed to overwhelm all of your senses. And when there's, for example, Dia de un Santo that they're celebrating, they fill these churches with a lot of flowers. So you are overwhelmed by the colors. You're overwhelmed by the gold because it's about power as well. Mm-hmm. And you're overwhelmed by the smells. All of your senses are completely overwhelmed and taken over. And that's what you do with your installations.
Yeah. And, you know, it makes sense to have that reference from you of like thinking about a church in Michoacan or the way that your mom experiences that, because the nature of the work comes from my huge influence of the Catholic Church being like the first museum that I went to. Because right. I never went to like an art museum exactly. until I was like 18.
Oh my God, I never thought about it like yeah. that. Like for a lot of Latinos, our first museum, it's a fucking
church.
It's a church,
yeah. So I would love going to church on Sunday and I would take all my shit with me and like a bag and my toys and all this stuff. And I'd be playing with my sister, getting her ass beat, you know, like hair pulled to like stop being distracted. But I was mostly distracted by the paintings.
Right.
By all of the whack-ass bodies. But, you know, the stained glass, the colors, like the decadence of it. And I was always so intrigued by it because I had no idea what it was.
Yeah, it's the Baroque, yeah.
And that's my sort of first introduction to art and being interested in it as this, like, idea of, like, the uncanny, something that you can't have, like a desire to want to find out more.
Right. You know what I would do when I was in church when I was a kid? Dice mi mamá que yo me subía a la banca y me ponía a bailar. Imagine. Bitch twerking to alabaré, alabaré, alabaré. My mom is like, ay, me daba tanta vergüenza, pero te subías a la banca y te ponías a bailar con las canciones de la church. I was like, oh, sorry.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
So, again, we get sidetracked.
Oh, yeah, but what I was saying is that it's a similar experience that happened there because I had audience approach the booth and be really interested in the colors and the aesthetics and then turn away.
Right.
Once they find out what the content is of the work and all these visual cues of like state sanctioned violence, people being apprehended, etc. It's like very apparent, but it takes some further looking, further unpacking some of the other like visual cues to get to that place. And once they would get there, they would be disappointed. And I fucking love that.
Wow. So it's like they wanted to be bathed in color in this sensuous world of fucking sugar. And then they get in there and they realize they're fucking Republicans.
Right.
And then they turn around.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And this is what I admire about your work, too, that gets me excited, because I see so many cultural producers. I see so many content producers that played with two things. They played with the stereotypes of who we are, and they played with our tragedies.
Mm.
Over and over again. And you do both without even us noting that. You tap into some of like the things that we are, you know, like as like we like fucking pan dulce, man. Like, this is who we are, right? And then you also are commenting you're also commenting on tragedy and trauma. But you are not playing that trauma you're not playing that trauma for white tears.
Right.
You're making people complacent when they approach your work and they're like, oh, fuck. Like, this is kind of my fault.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's fascinating about your work, because it is a commentary on how sentimentalism works.
Mm.
Because a sentimentalist piece will just take away all the sugar, take away all the frosting, and just show you the trauma of kids in the border, right? And that's how you get white tears, and that's how people feel better about themselves, because they cry when they saw that kids on the border. You cover all of that with layers and layers of painting and sculpture and frosting, and then when people are like, ya se están llenando, and they're so happy, boom, guess what, Mimi? This is all your fault too. What are you gonna do about it? And that's fascinating, right? Because you can tap into everything that we are as Latinx people, as Mexicanos, but also holding a mirror in front of people about what they're doing, you know? So, like, when I saw your pieces in the studio, it all clicked in. Mm-hmm. It all clicked in, and me emocioné.
Thank you.
So people were like, people just were refusing back and
forth. Some people, yeah. Some people. I think most of the audience that was coming to Expo, I mean, it was received positively, you know, was like written about and hyperallergic. It was like one of the top, I was like labeled as one of the top 10 artists to collect that day.
Did you sold out?
I didn't sell out.
Interesting.
And I actually didn't sell a lot.
Interesting.
And I'm always like super.
But see, that's a reflection exactly what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's complicated, because with political work, I think, or the political nature of my work can I think be a decision factor in somebody wanting to own it or not, and vice versa.
And you know what? It's also gender.
Right, and
because they see the pink, they see the frosting, like, this is female, I want to be part of it. And then you have this, like, how old are you? Can you say? Okay, you don't want to say. You have this young, Mexicana, strong female artist making people think.
Mm-hmm. I'm 27.
What a concept. But you know what I'm saying?
No, yeah.
So
definitely.
That makes people uncomfortable, especially if you're white in your 50s and you're voted for Trump.
Right, exactly.
Which is, unfortunately, a lot of the people that go to those art fairs.
Mm-hmm. This is true, yeah. And they are the ones who collect the work, you know?
Correct.
At the end of the day, we need to have more Latinos, you know, like the Black community does, that are owning Black work. We need Latinos that are owning Latino work. And I know that we do have some, but it's not... It doesn't equate to the amount of emerging Latino artists,
but it's
that
I think
are out here in these spaces.
And I think it's not so cyclical. I think things are going to change, but I see representation, and this is gonna come out a month from now or something like that. But my husband and I just saw Us. And this was after we saw a trailer for La fucking Llorona, which is fucking trash, a trailer for Dora the Explorer, which is fucking trash, and a trailer for a movie called Chicano, which is fucking trash.
This is why I don't go to the movies.
Right. So we watch these trailers and we're like, yay, representation. But then you see what, like, the Black community is doing, but it also took them a long time.
True.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's been a lot of struggle and a lot of work. So, yes, we are represented, but, like, not the way that we should. It's all trash. So I feel like in different sectors of cultural production in this country, this is what is going to continue to happen, that we're finally being recognized as cultural producers, as people that are making art. But we have yet to hold those positions in powers to be the collector, so
exactly.
We can actually have more control of the art market.
Mm-hmm.
It's still white people, and guess what? It's still going to be white people for the next couple of decades, unfortunately.
Yep.
So that's what we need to look at it, the bigger picture, as opposed to like, ah, ya la hice. Like, I'm right. represented by a gallery. Like, that's just the beginning, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's just the stepping stone. Yeah.
So you arrive to our humble headquarters studios of Latinos Who Lunch. And we fed you homemade chocolate croissants and my husband made last night. But you seem frustrated. You seem like you were, not because of the food, because the food was great. I'm assuming. But you seem like you were stressed. Like, you were overwhelmed. Like, there's also reality about being an artist that is trying to become a full-time artist. Definitely. Like, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, and I'm always super open to be open and to be talking about, like, the logistics behind being an artist and all of the day-to-day stuff that, you know, you don't get taught at art school or right. that you don't see through social media. And yeah, it's frustrating because I really want to be a full-time artist, and I'm feeling it more and more, the need to be a full-time artist right. because of all of these opportunities that I have coming up, all these exhibitions, you know, all of the art admin work that I have to do, all the day-to-day stuff. And, you know, it takes up the time of like a full-time job, and I still have to navigate a part-time job alongside right. having a practice. So I'm like a part-time artist, but really, you know, I'm working like over 50 hours a week.
Yeah.
In combination with my practice and my job, yeah.
It is a lot. And taking the leap to full-time artist, it's going to be a struggle, girl.
It's scary, yeah.
I saw Favi do it. I remember Favi went to a big old show and then came back. I picked him up from the airport, and he was bitching. He's like, oh, I'm tired of doing my 9-to-5. I want to do this full-time. And I remember we had a talk, and I was like, you need to be humble and understand where you come from. And he's like, fuck that. I'm going to push it. I'm going to push. And he did, and I mm-hmm. admire him for that. And he became full-time artist, and he's struggling in the beginning. And he's still struggling because he cannot stop.
Right, exactly.
Right? It's not like you can take your 2-week vacation and everything, because you have to be producing and you right. have to be making that dough. So it is possible. And I Definitely. Think you already have una pierna del otro lado. So I think you should do it. Maybe not right now, but you definitely should do it. But it's going to be difficult. I think less than 5% of artists in this country actually make a living full time off of their work.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So just even making money part time of your work, it's already a privilege.
Definitely.
But making that leap is going
to
be
all the time, or even having 3 days out of the week to go to my studio. Like when I, you know, get up, do my routine, get to the studio at like 10 a.m., leave at like 6 p.m. and I'm there during the day, and I'm like, wow, this is like a privilege. I have a studio, and I have, you know, the capacity to be here 25 hours a week.
Right.
Which is a privilege in itself already. Mm-hmm, but I'm giving myself like 1 or 2 years and hoping that by then,
poco a poquito, man. Yeah. I mean, it can be poco a poquito, but sometimes you have to take those jumps where like, fuck it, I'm just going to do it, and here I am.
Yeah.
But I think you will. I think so too. Your work is strong. Your work, it's very of the now. So you need to ride and keep riding that wave, because you never know how long that's going to last. There's going to be a point where like, you do this for the rest of your life, or you're going to become an educator. Like, a lot of things can happen, right? But while there's a wave, you need to ride that crest and not let go, because people of color cannot afford to let go yet. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
White artists, it's different. It's a different market. You have so many generations of white artists that are born and grow and died with art. We taught it ourselves. Me being an art historian, it's not something that I planned. Like, I just, you know, I was just attracted to it, but I didn't have an example of academics behind me.
Right, exactly.
So it becomes like every step that I've taken and that I continue to take, it's like, what?
Yeah, same. Or, you know, having a studio. Like, I never knew anybody who had a studio.
Right.
And what do you have in the studio? And how do you do the art admin stuff? And, you know, how do you write grants? And how do you communicate with institutions? And how do you install a show? And how do you package your work? It's like all of these things that I've had to learn independently, like on my own.
Right. So for all
of... And it's challenging, but I think this is why... You know, I was telling you before, whenever I go talk at an institution, like a school or, you know, a university, or whatever it is, like with it, if it's young people, I love to be open about how much I sell my work for, open about how much I got paid that day to go talk to them, open about all the admin stuff that I have to do, how long mm-hmm. that takes, all of those questions that especially young artists of color don't have those certain outlets aside from mentors. And art school don't
give you those tools.
Art school doesn't give you those tools because I feel like it's kind of like this faux pas mm-hmm. to give you those tools, and it's really hierarchical, and like you kind of have to figure right. out that shit on your own, and it doesn't make sense. I feel like we should have this instilled in the 2-year grad school, 4-year undergrad, and they do touch base on it like a bit, but they don't go deep into
detail. Yeah.
Yeah. What it really looks like.
And the thing is that art school plays into the myth of the artist. So if you don't fit that myth the way you're supposed to fit that myth, they're not going to prepare you for the out world, like the outside world. So if you come into the school and you play that myth, they're going to connect you with galleries if they think you are it, right? And if they don't, and many times it's based on gender and race, as much as art professors out there may think I'm full of bullshit, but it's not. Like, many times those things are taken into consideration. If you're not the myth, you're not gonna be given the tools. Many times you go to art school and you come out with a career, but that's like true. 1 out of 1,000, right? Mm-hmm. 1 out of 100 students every couple of years. So as people of color, we gotta do our own.
But I feel like, and I'm speaking for myself, but I feel like as kid of immigrant parents, like mm-hmm. I've been being independent even with their help as like a little kid,
right?
I feel like I was already prepared for this. I already had that sort of institutional help from my parents, right, on how to navigate.
Yeah, we
the
have
daily,
other skills that,
exactly yeah. that, and I can employ those skills into like my practice now and how to be professional, etc., you know. But it's like calling, I don't know, the insurance company when you're like 6 and you're like translating for your parents and all those sort of things mm-hmm. that you have to take on as a young person makes you be self-sustainable.
Right. In a different way
in a different way.
A lot of other people
exactly.
can. Yes, you're absolutely right. So we got to play those skills yeah. that we're given. Like, si te enseñaron a hacer tortillas, pues a comer tortillas, güey.
Exactly.
Because that's it. That's yeah. all there is left. Speaking of tortillas, let's talk about menudo.
Because I love menudo.
I know you do, girl. So I have this fight with my husband about fucking menudo because I'm from the north. I'm from the border. And apparently people from the border have their own conceptions about Mexican food. One of them is having menudo with hominy.
I hate that shit.
A ver. Explícame por qué.
Also, for all of you that know me very well, uh-huh. I am vegetarian. Just mm-hmm. not on Sundays.
Or when you come to my house that I feed you fucking tacos made out of bacon yeah. and steak and
so
shit.
So good. It's because when menudo has hominy, it's like pozole.
Yeah, it's glorious.
It's not menudo anymore.
Exactly.
No, it's like that's what makes it like gross. I want it. I want to have all of the like stomach waxy meat in my mouth, and I don't want any hominy with it.
Fuertes declaraciones.
It's like when they put too much cilantro and cebolla on your tacos and not enough meat. That's what it's like when they put the hominy in there because you know
okay.
that there's not going to be enough meat.
I'll give you that. Cuando me sirven el menudo, que es like the ratio is like 70% hominy and 30% meat, I'm just like, this is shit. I want more meat. But I gotta have that balance. Without the hominy, there's no balance. There's no flavor. I don't know, güey. Es como si estuvieras... I don't know, say, güey. No me
but
gusta.
Then when you're making the tacos, you get your tortilla, you put the meat on there, the cebolla, the cilantro, you put a little bit of limon, and your tortilla is already, like, breaking. If you're eating the right kind of tortilla. Okay, so then if you add hominy to it, how the hell are you going to make little tacos?
Because you don't, because in the north, we eat it with pan tostado. So you grab a bolillo,
what?
Lo partes a la mitad, you fry it with butter, and then you take that bolillo, and then you stick it in the juice, en el caldito, y te lo comes así, se te derrite. Mira, güey, me lo como, y caigo en un abismo de
that
pasión.
That sounds kind of gross, like a menudo sandwich.
No, it's not a sandwich, güey. I'm not making fucking sandwiches out of the fucking bread. I'm just like, you dip the bread. Así como cuando agarras una galleta and
it's
you
like
put it with
Pan
milk.
It's like the Pan Bimbo bread, the one that comes in a little.
Why you gotta go with the corporations? I have no clue. But, okay, the way you put it makes sense.
You know what I'm talking about.
I wish Emma would have done that for me. Be like, no, honey, you don't have hominy, but grab the tortilla, make yourself a taco.
See, yes.
Wait. No, he's not listening. He's working. Anyway. Well, this is amazing. I want to keep talking and talking to you about art, but yes. We got to cut it. But I want you to tell us a little bit about where we can find your shows or your art in the late spring, maybe in the summer. Where are some of your plans, et cetera.
I think actually by the time this comes out, I will still have work up in L.A., mm-hmm. for the Standard exhibition that's up at Loyola Marymount University. It's okay. Part of Standard. It's called Dreamweavers, and artists were invited to create flags that hang in the courtyard. And so that'll be up for a bit. And then I have a solo show coming up. If you're in Indianapolis, I'll be reinstalling Height Maintenance, which is the solo show that I had at Expo Chicago back in 2017. Ooh. That we're referencing a lot here. So it'll be up in Indianapolis at this gallery called the Tube Factory.
Which How far is it from here?
It's like 4 hours, I think. Three.
Oh, road trip.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that opens May 3rd, and it's going to run for about a month. And then in the fall of 2020, I'm going to have a solo show in New York at Gary Contemporary.
Nice. Is that your gallery that represents you? Or
no, I'm independent.
Eso, a huevo.
For now.
Okay.
And then a solo show in January of 2020 in Austin, Texas at Mass Gallery.
Nice. Hey, Mass. Yeah. Shout out to everybody in Austin. Hey. Amazing, amazing art space. I'm happy. Man, you're everywhere.
Yeah, and it's really awesome because, you know, I'm like leaving Chicago, New York, getting to LA, and then now Texas. It'll be the first solo show that I have in Texas. So.
And that's another clue. Like, start, if you are doing work, sometimes you get recognition locally. You need to start showing your stuff somewhere else.
Definitely.
And I know every city has its politics and it's cliquey, but send your pictures. Like when you visit, tell them what you're doing. Always connect. If you are on vacation in another place, like find out when the openings are and go to the openings. You have to kiss ass for so long.
Well, no, you don't. Unfortunately. You don't have to kiss ass.
No, kiss ass, but like you have to like play the game. You know what I'm saying? Like you have to like Fabio always told me, he goes, I went to openings almost every fucking weekend for 2 years.
Really?
That's all he did.
I kind of hate going to openings.
I hate it too, girl. I hate it so much. But like it gets to a point where you're an artist where people see you.
You need to be seen. That's
exactly.
True.
And you're going to know everybody. Everybody's going to know you and know exactly what you're doing. And the opportunities are going to come out. So if you are a local artist from a small town, I don't know, in Kansas, if you take a vacation to LA, find out where the openings are. Start talking to people. You never know. Like, yes, you're absolutely right. Do not kiss ass. But be seen and play the game.
Seen,
it's important,
definitely.
Because we have to, you know?
And I think too, although maybe this sounds like the myth again of being an artist, but I think really making work in your studio continuously, being dedicated, mm-hmm. making, eventually you're going to have a studio visit. Somebody's going to see it. You have things to show, and then a show can come from that.
And learn how to talk about your art, because I've seen some amazing art. Y luego los oigo hablar, and it's like, mwah, mwah, mwah. Like, it's so bad. So learn how to talk about your work.
Get that 2-minute elevator speech practice.
I heard it this weekend, girl. I was like, this bitch knows how to talk. I told Emma, I'm like, look, did you just hear that? That was like a minute.
Oh, when I talked,
and yes. Everything I needed to know about her work, she told me, and I can tell that she knows what's up. Mm-hmm. So before we go, any artists that you are attracted to at the moment, or maybe some music, something that inspires you to work right now?
Right now, I'm like really listening to Divino Niño a lot.
I need to get into it.
I do like waves of an artist. I'm like that person that listens to somebody for like a week and then like switches.
Lately, you listen to full albums?
No, not full albums, but just like shuffle past, you know, new
music.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same artist though. An artist, I mean, I'm always inspired by Ana Serrano's work. I love her work so much. There's also this artist called, I'm going to like butcher her name. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say it. This artist that has work up at the Hammer Museum right okay. now, her work is incredible. Super into it.
I'll put the link on the website. Okay.
And then I guess these are mostly artists from LA. Gabriella's work, she's doing like amazing paintings that have like iconography and symbolism. They're like, she has like a background in graphic design. So I'm really inspired, I think, mostly by Latina women at the moment and usually.
See, that's beautiful. Like, Latinx artists couldn't necessarily say that 20 years ago.
This is true.
And mm-hmm. that's exactly, I'm going to go on a tangent, but this is exactly what happened with painting in Mexico. The first wave of painters after colonization came from Spain. So painting in Mexico was a reflection of painting in Spain. Mm. But then those painters started to have kids that were born in Mexico. So by the second and third generation, artists were inspired by local artists, not by what was happening in Europe. Mm. So after 100 years, I mean, things happened much faster today, but after 100 years was Mexican art. You can say, oh, it looks Spanish, it looks Flemish, it looks this. It was Mexican because it was Mexican artists being inspired by Mexican artists, right?
Yeah.
And that's what's happening right now, and that's what's pretty fucking exciting.
It is, yeah. Yvette, and it's amazing to have a lot of women too,
right?
That are out
exactly
here
that's
the
another thing
making.
Exactly. Yes. That's so important.
Representation matters.
Exactly. And with that note, we'll say goodbye. Yvette, thank you so much.
Thank
I want to have you again in the podcast, hopefully next time. It will be Fabi, you and I. I know you because of Fabi, so like I'm always going to be thankful. Yes. And we will get into it. We'll get into other aspects because I want to talk to both of you because both of you have similar trajectories, but also very, very different. So it will be interesting to contrast both of your trajectories.
Definitely.
But anyway, so this is all here from Chicagoland. I'll see you guys later or talk
Bye.
To you later. I don't know how to say goodbye. ¿Cómo les quedó el ojo, cabrones? Pues, there you have it, my amazing friend, Yvette Mayorga. Ever since week one I got to this town, she's been there for me. I love you, Yvette. I love you, Jesus. I can't wait till we all get drunk again together because it's always so much fun. But as I promised before, towards the end of the interview, I asked Yvette about what is she listening to. And she told me to check out this band called El Niño Divino, or just Niño Divino. No, Divino Niño, sorry. And I started getting into it. And not too long ago, I mean, I don't know exactly when they released this, but they are teasing us with a new album. The album is going to come out on June 21st. June 24th. Wow. June 21st via Windspare. And you can actually go to Spotify right now and wherever you listen to music and listen to a preview of the album. My favorite song is an actual single. It's called Maria. And this music, I don't know. You guys know how much I love Los Walters. You guys know how much I love this sort of dream pop, bedroom pop movement that it's happening right now. Actually, I was just watching a YouTube video of how the internet has made possible all these new movements of music that not make possible new movements, but make them more available to everybody. So somebody like Cuco, who likes, I don't know, classic rock, but also psychedelic rock and likes hip hop, everything. He's able to do that with a synthesizer from his bedroom and put the music out there with the most relatable lyrics and boom, you get a whole entire new genre. And like that, there's a lot of examples, and Divino Niño gives you a little bit of that dream pop, a little bit of that bedroom pop, but with a different level of production. There's a lot of references that I feel, but also with that sabor Latino towards, you know, like in the background, which makes, again, album bands like Los Walters, like Camilo VII, and so many other bands, they're so unique to our community. So again, the name of the album, which comes out June 21st, is called Foam. And you can preview the LP, and it has three songs: Maria, Coca-Cola, and Foam. But again, I love, 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 love the song Maria because it has everything I need from a Latinx dream pop. So no se lo pierdan. Listen to it. It's amazing. And again, thank you very much for your patience, for listening to our interviews. We promise you we're getting ready to record together. If we're also getting ready to present in Las Vegas. Oh, I don't have those details, but I'll bring them to you. So we're going to have a live Latinos Who Lunch episode in Las Vegas coming up soon. Going back home. I can't wait. A little bit of sun. This weather is driving me nuts. En fin, luckily, I have somebody that just made a bunch of sourdough bread for me, so I'm gonna go. I love you, everybody. Bye. Oh, wait. This episode has been produced by Emmanuel Ortega and Justin Favela. The music that you're listening to is the band from the band Brown Out. I am Babelito. Remember, always go to iTunes and rate us. Five stars solamente, because visibility is important and it leads, no, wait, how does it go? Oh, because visibility is important and visibility leads to representation and representation matters. Again, thank you everybody. I promise you, Fabi, I'm going to get this down, the whole exit. You do it beautifully, but one day, boom, it's gonna happen. Oh, by the way, happy 3-year anniversary. We've been around for 3 years. El Cinco de Mayo fue nuestro aniversario. So, you know, send those gifts. Send that money. You know, just to make us keep going. Anyway, I don't know what I'm saying anymore. So I will let you all go. Bye.